This is Scott Becker with the Becker Group Women's Leadership Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Mari Qureshi. Mari is the president of the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund, which does fabulous and fantastic things. We're going to get a chance to visit with Mari about this today. Mari, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. My name is Mari Qureshi. I am the president of the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund, and I joined the fund almost 2 years ago. But before that, I ran a crowdfunding platform called Global Giving. And before that, I was a country officer at the World Bank.
So fascinating. Take a moment and tell us what the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund does and what you're proud of and the big priorities.
So the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund is a place-based grant maker. We are a private foundation based here in Jacksonville, Florida, where Mrs. DuPont lived with her husband, Alfred I. DuPont. She left her fortune to set up this foundation, and we are focused on supporting the communities and institutions that Jesse loved, and they are, many of them are based here in Jacksonville, but some are also based in other parts of Florida. There are a number of institutions we support in Virginia because she grew up, was born and grew up in Virginia, as well as some communities and institutions in Delaware, where, of course, her husband, Alfred I. DuPont, grew up and worked. So we see ourselves as a place-based grant maker focused on making the communities and institutions that Jesse loved as inclusive and welcoming as possible.
Can you tell us how big the foundation is? Is that a public piece of information?
Absolutely. It's our endowment is, give or take, $300 million with markets these days. It sort of goes up and down. And so our grant making is somewhere in the order of 10 to 15 million any given year. And we are, as I said, focused on those geographic localities. So we are, I would say, a medium-sized foundation.
Well, fantastic. In the economics of foundations, is the concept that they try and reduce their foundation a little bit every year, or is it more that they try and work off of income and growth and use that money to fund things?
The different foundations take different approaches. Some foundations are dedicated to spend down. So the idea would be that, you know, the Atlantic Philanthropies Foundation, for instance, spent its endowment down and made sure that over the years, you know, they put themselves out of business. Other foundations are, by the nature of the wills that they were set up with, forced, you know, required to keep an endowment and to be perpetual foundations.
Fascinating. I was just really curious. And you worked for a period of time at the World Bank. And the World Bank, as I understand it, is really a fascinating institution. Can you take a moment and tell us about that?
Yes, I used to work at the World Bank from 1991 to about 2000. And I was working on the Soviet program, which then became the Russian program. And I did a lot of work in Russia until about 1998 or so, when I moved on to do work on corporate strategy, budgeting, strategy formation, innovation, and the like for the president of the World Bank at the time, who was James Wolfensohn.
Fascinating. And tell us, how hard is it to decide which charities to give to when you're running a foundation? How hard is it to decide which are the priorities and which charities to give to?
We are in a unique situation. Well, or maybe not unique, but the will that dictates how we operate requires that we either give to the charities that Mrs. DuPont supported in her lifetime, or for very specific needs in the communities that she cared about. So we do less choosing of who to support than perhaps other foundations might.
And how did you decide that this is where you wanted to lead, that this is what you wanted to be in charge of?
So I must admit that when, you know, I used to run Global Giving, which is digital, very global, and, you know, really not engaged in extensive work in discrete communities. I had no idea that I would end up at the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund here in Jacksonville, Florida. But when the opportunity presented itself to me, the thing that really caught my eye was that the DuPont Fund is in some ways a big fish in a little pond when it comes to the work in Jacksonville. So it has influence and an ability to move the needle in ways that I didn't necessarily feel at Global Giving. I mean, Global Giving will give away probably $100 million this year to, you know, projects in over 175 different countries. That's a lot of money, but spread out over that kind of geographic scope, it's, you know, it's harder to get your arms around. Whereas the work that the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund does in discrete communities, including in Jacksonville, like I could see what our impact is and get really down to figuring out how to make that impact come about. And that is a very different feeling. I also wanted, having lived, you know, for 30 years in Washington, D.C., which is obviously the place not just of D.C. politics, but of federal politics and in some ways global politics, right? And it was a way to see if within a discrete community we could all come to agreement about what needed to be done, regardless of, you know, where your ideological loyalties might lie. So that the idea that we could come together around things and come to agreement about what things were important for the community was really appealing.
I mean, it must be. And you could really see sort of a tangible use of the funds. You really see the impact you make, whether it's to the local hospital or whatever it is to, you really see the local impact that your funds have. Mm-hmm. Mari, you've built sort of this fascinating career. What advice would you have for emerging professionals, emerging leaders, about either leadership or about building great careers?
I work with and studied with a lot of people who kind of knew exactly what they were going to do from day one. And I must admit that I wasn't one of those people. I had no idea that I was going to end up at the World Bank. It's a funny story, but I was in a PhD program working on Soviet politics in 1991 when the Soviet Union fell apart, and my discipline, political science, had failed to predict the single most important thing that happened to the Soviet Union. I was like, well, this is not a good idea. And I left my PhD program and joined the World Bank because they were looking for Russia experts. But I honestly had no idea what the World Bank did when I applied for the job. But it was one of the most remunerative things I ever did. I got to work in Russia with the reformers. It was a heady time. And I'm so glad that I was open to that opportunity. You know, I didn't think I was going to become an entrepreneur and start up a new thing. That global giving was not something that I had always intended to do. It just seemed like the right thing at the time. And the same with this opportunity here at the Jesse Paul DuPont Fund. Again, I didn't think I was going to be here, but I'm so glad I am. So the one piece of advice I would have for people like me who don't necessarily know what they're going to do when they're going through college or even graduate school is to be open to opportunities and to leverage what strengths you have to jump into things that perhaps you might not have been thinking about.
Well, I think that's magnificent advice. And I remember a college visit with one of my children and everybody going around the room and each person knowing exactly what they wanted to do. And me and my daughter being there and being like, well, I don't know what I want to do compared to what these kids all want to do. And it was very intimidating because as you spoke of, every single person was like, I want to be a future engineer. I want to be a future investment banker. I want to do this. I want to do that. And she was uncertain. It was fascinating, but she's brilliant and open-minded like you. So it's worked out okay. So it's fascinating to watch. Murray, one more question.
Mm-hmm.
You have umpteen degrees from Harvard. I think umpteen's an exaggeration, maybe three or four. But tell us about that. Are you the most brilliant person you ever meet, or are people smarter than you?
Well, you know the old saying about you can always tell a Harvard man, you can't tell him much.
Yeah, but they've expanded that to a Harvard woman as well today. But yeah.
So, you know, the true story about how I ended up at Harvard to begin with is I was an international student. I'm Japanese. I had not lived in the United States. And when I told my dad I wanted to go to college in the United States, he said, well, you better go to some college whose name I recognize. And him being Japanese, he didn't know that many universities, but he knew the name of Harvard. So he's like, okay, I'll pay for that. And so that's how I ended up there. And I stayed there and ended up getting more degrees because I was interested in what I was doing. But I am so not the smartest person in the room that, I mean, I love being around smart people, especially people smarter than me. So perhaps that's the reason I stayed.
It must be challenging for you to find those. But what a pleasure to visit with you, Murray. Thank you so much for joining the Beck Group Women's Leadership Podcast. Just terrific what you do and what a fascinating career story. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it.